Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, episode 60. My name is Kieran and as always I'm joined by my good friend out in the United States, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Kieran, it's interesting how this past weekend you and I both similarly had the same weather, all about the snow, and I think it's time that we bring out the orange soccer balls.
Ah, would have loved the orange soccer ball, mate. It doesn't happen anymore. As soon as a bit of snow comes, we postpone matches over here, completely wiped out the majority of the English calendar past weekend. But it is in England that we need to start, because on the day of recording there was big news that came from the FA. As we know and as we've discussed on previous shows, the FA WSL will have a new look from next season, a tier one which will be fully professional and a second tier which pretty much mirrors what we've got at the moment, which will be semi-professional with a bit of a stricter criteria. The FA today announced the clubs that will be in those two tiers. I'm just going to reel them off really quickly, JJ, before I get your view. Tier one will be Arsenal, Birmingham City, Brighton and Hove Albion, Bristol City, Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool, Manchester City, Reading and Yeovil Town. In Tier 2, it will be Aston Villa, Doncaster Rovers Bells, Durham, London Bees, Millwall Lionesses, Sheffield FC and Tottenham Hotspur. Now, at the moment, there are 10 clubs in Tier 1 and there are 7 clubs in Tier 2. The FA have made it known that there are a couple of spots available to be filled in Tier 1 and there is a maximum of 5 spots to be available in Tier 2. The way that it works is that clubs outside of the WSL have until March to submit an application. There are a couple of clubs as well, Sunderland and Oxford, who have not submitted applications as yet despite being WSL clubs, because they are exploring other options which could potentially see them pair up with clubs outside of the WSL. JJ, we've covered the NWSL since its inception. It's a fully professional league. Tier one of the new look structure will be fully professional. The FA's received some criticism because this has all happened very quickly, but ultimately this is what we want to see, a professional league. The key thing now is for it to be sustainable, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's interesting because the timing when they announced this was, correct me if I'm wrong, right after they announced kind of this newish structure, the fall to spring calendar season, where, you know, promotion relegation would still be a thing. And, you know, trying to really, not to say balance the competitiveness, but really establish these two tiers as the two professional tiers. Now, all of a sudden, it's kind of the big focal point in the men's side here in the U.S., where there is going to be no more promotion relegation, right? Where tier one, it's just going to be those X amount of clubs. Tier two, it's going to be those X amount of clubs. And then everywhere else, it's just going to be as is. But yeah, I think, you know, in taking steps to the sustainability factor and really establish this league that is being the tier one league to being one of the big forces, not only in Europe, but in the world, I think, you know, it's the right move. But yeah, it was questionable, the timing of it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and people will probably wonder what the difference is going to be, and I think there's three key things, and there's a very good article on the BBC Sport website if you want to have a look. And the three things that really stand out is that teams have to offer a minimum of 16 hours contact time, or training as people would better know it, in the first season. It'll be 20 hours per week by the season 2020 to 2021. There's got to be a minimum level of financial investment from the club while meeting financial fair play regulations. And also there's got to be a youth academy at each club. So that means that there's going to be development within those clubs as well. Now, for you, JJ, there will have been one club in there, in that top tier, that will be new to you, and that will be Brighton and Hove Albion. They are currently in WSL 2, and they earned that place by being promoted from the Women's Premier League South last season. Hope Powell, the former England coach, is the current head coach of Brighton. They've shown huge ambition by putting a WSL1 application together. They will be a WSL1 club from next season. Rather strangely, they're going to be playing their fixtures in an area that you won't be familiar with called Crawley, which is about 20 miles away from Brighton. But huge steps and a huge statement from them, isn't it, to go from third-tier football to first-tier football in the space of, well, less than a year.
Well, Kieran, first, I'm a little disappointed that you're questioning my ability and knowledge of the English flight, because, yes, I'm very familiar with Crawley Town. They played Manchester United a couple of seasons ago in the FA Cup, so try me harder again next time, because, please, I know my knowledge. But, yeah, no, I think it's interesting. When you look at two clubs in specific, one being Brighton and Hove Albion, the other being Tottenham Hotspur, where they really weren't a big player in the women's game until maybe the past couple of seasons. And sticking with Brighton and Hove, I think on the women's side, and what my understanding is, Joe Curry did a great job, by the way, kind of giving a little bit of a small recap on what they've done over the past 12 to 18 months, is they've put in a big point and factor on trying to up the finances, up the facilities, try to bring in a club that is run professional, even though it's at the WSL2 side. My understanding is also they've got a pretty good squad there right now as it is, and they're competing quite well within the division. The last that I've seen, that they're joint second, though by goal differential they're in fourth, only a couple points behind Doncaster Rovers Bells. So, yeah, I mean, this is a good move for them, and it's a little bit of a shout to the rest of the circuit saying, you know, hey, it doesn't mean that you have to be the traditional team to be up there. If you put the time, put the energy and resources into it, you could be within that top tier.
Yeah, Watford FC, hope you're listening to what JJ just said there, not applying for a WSL license at all, but don't get me started on that one. You're absolutely right. Great ambition shown by Brighton with Hope Powell at the helm. They're sure to be, you know, I would say not necessarily competing for titles early on, but give them time and who knows, a professional outlet. They're surely going to attract some good talent down there as well. You've got the usual suspects in there that we've mentioned, the likes of Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City. Got to give huge shout out to Yeovil Town, because when this new structure was announced, Yeovil made it very clear that this was really going to push them in terms of resources. It didn't give them an awful lot of time to put their plan in place. Yeovil Town's men's team are a fourth tier club. They are a couple of points. In fact, they're joint at the moment with a team that is second bottom. And if they finished second bottom at the end of the season, they would fall out of the Football League altogether and would become a non-league side. Their women's team is going to be a top tier club, as it is at the moment and will continue to be from next season. I haven't seen anything regarding their application at the moment, mate, because it's still very early on. But that is hugely impressive for a club of that size to be able to put a case forward that allows them to continue in the top division, isn't it?
Well, it truly shows that if you get a collective unit of people that believe in what they're doing, then the opportunities are endless. So, I mean, yeah, it's funny because I think you and I have talked about it before on the show, where the Yeovil men's team pretty much have no say or really anything into what the women's team does. But here they are, Yeovil Town ladies, while we've agreed that they've been punching above their weight for quite a long time right now, they've still yet to register a point this season in the WSL1. But they're making a claim saying, hey, you know what, we're here to stay. There is a reason why we got here, and we're going to continue to do whatever it takes to have top-level women's football with this organization.
Yeah, without doubt, without doubt. And I mentioned earlier, looking at Tier 2, there are currently seven clubs, and people who are listening might be thinking, well, how do you have a league with seven teams? As we mentioned, there is an extended period for applications for clubs that fall outside of the WSL. So I think they have until March the 9th to submit their applications. So there is spots open for up to five teams within that second tier. And I'm almost certain that we will see at least a few more. There are clubs who've made it very clear that they are going to be applying. And I think Crystal Palace is one of them. Crystal Palace currently a bit further down the football pyramid. Derby County have made suggestions that they could potentially go forward. The interesting one, and it could well be, mate, that they go into and apply for the first tier, is West Ham United. Now, West Ham currently play in the Premier League South, but they are showing signs of some big ambition there. I don't know if you know much about the owners of the men's club, but it's owned by two guys, David Sullivan and David Gold. And David Sullivan's son, Jack, is actually kind of heading up the women's team at the moment. And he is making a lot of noise about the club potentially going for big things. So it could be that we see another Premier League club going into the top tier.
Which is absolutely amazing, to be honest with you. I mean, you're talking about a team that's, you know, similar to what we've seen with Brighton and Hove and Tottenham Hotspur over the past couple of years, being in, I guess what the women's comparison is, non-league football or non-full-time professional, very, very semi-professional, to being at the top level. So must be a lot of finances and a lot of backing coming from somewhere. But if they are able to pull it off, good for them. Now, Kieran, I do have a question. I do want some clarification because I'm reading through the documents released by the FA earlier. Now, is it possible that the team that wins the WPL this year, similar to in years past, get a spot no matter what their standing is in Tier 2 next year?
They would need to meet the criteria. The FA have made it very clear that they're not going to make decisions on which teams are going to be going in from outside of the WSL until after the Women's Premier League playoff at the end of the season. So once that playoff has been played, they will be in a position to make a decision. So if the team that wins that meets the criteria, then yes, the likelihood is that they will go into Tier 2. If they've applied for Tier 1, it may well be that they go into Tier 1. I think at the moment we're a little bit unsure. But yes, we're not going to find out for a little while, mate. The teams that we have at the moment, they have, well, I was going to say they've cemented their place, but I will make it known that some of the clubs, and Bristol City are one of them, have got what have been described as a conditional place within the new structure, and they will have to demonstrate that they can meet the criteria moving forward. And if they don't, it could be that that license is either reviewed or even revoked. So still a little bit up in the air at the moment, mate. I wouldn't say that everything is cemented and rubber stamped at the moment. We've still got teams to come in. But obviously today was a big announcement, so we wanted to cover it and make it known what's happening so far. I guess from the downside, we have to look at it. It has put clubs under pressure, hasn't it? We've talked about how great Yeovil have done, but we're now looking at a situation at the moment where Sunderland are currently not in Tier 1 or Tier 2. Oxford are not in Tier 1 or Tier 2, more likely Tier 2 if they are going to end up in the WSL. It's put some unnecessary pressure on clubs, hasn't it? And now I guess we're going to be seeing how serious these clubs are going to be supported by their men's side, because without that support, it looks like they might be dropping down to further in the pyramid.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough at the end of the day. I actually had a chance to chat very briefly with a couple of players that play for Durham. And, you know, kind of the feeling is around, you know, clubs like that, it's pretty much what you're saying. You know, it's going to be a challenge, and it is really a bit of a It's a sharp look into how some teams that may have been, not to say scathing by or, you know, just getting by, but they're going to have to really put the value and the time into making some changes to try and make this league not only be competitive at both levels, but to really get the best out of footballers and to also pave the way for the future as well. And I know it sounds very cliche and whatnot, but at the end of the day, this is about cementing this league, both tiers, for decades to come, so there doesn't have to ever be a worry for players. If they want to play professional football domestically, they can do so because there are X amount of teams at each level that will always be there.
Yeah, without doubt, without doubt. Well, we talked about how great it is, what Yeovil Town have done, and it would be only right that we speak to someone who's been really, really important for that club over the last couple of years, and that's head coach Jamie Sherwood, good friend of mine, good friend of the show. So I had a little chat with him about the club's successful Tier 1 application. So here's Jamie and myself having a quick chat about what has been a very good day for Yeovil Town. So I am really, really pleased to be joined by an individual who's probably smiling from ear to ear as we're speaking on the day that Yeovil Town have had their Tier 1 WSL application accepted. Head coach Jamie Sherwood. Jamie, always a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you, mate?
I'm good, KT, and I appreciate the chance to be on your podcast because I listen to it every week.
Good man, good man. We appreciate that. Well, I mean, look, the floor is yours really for this show, mate. I mean, it's an incredible day, I'm sure, for the club, accepted into what will be the new tier one of whatever the name of the league will be come 2018, 2019. But I guess from an outsider looking in, it was always going to be ambitious for a club the size of Yeovil. You punch above your weight with the resource that you've got available. But talk about what this means for the club to be playing top tier football next season, continuing to play top tier football. Of course, you're in the WSL one now, but to continue that on into the future must be really pleasing.
Well, we set out a plan when we first took over, and the plan was to be in WSL one, and we've done that, and now it is the next part of that plan was obviously to establish ourselves. It's been a different way of doing it, be through the new license criteria, and it's a positive for our football club. There are obviously some stories around that aren't as positive this evening or over the last couple of weeks, and the changes going forward are the right changes if you take away the emotion of the football clubs for the way that the game is going to grow and the way that the game wants to be. But then you put in the emotion, you put in your own little football clubs or your big football clubs, and things change slightly in your head and your heart are in different places. But for us as a football club, it's an amazing achievement. It was an amazing achievement to reach it, but to actually be in a position where we're going to be establishing ourselves as one of the biggest clubs in the country, and to compete and challenge against the biggest clubs in the country and some of the best teams in Europe, as we've already seen this season, is a great feeling. But it's not just about the football club; it's about the region, it's about the actual growing of the game, which is what we've all been talking about for the last 6 to 8 weeks since the new changes have been publicised. So it's about that inspiration for the young girls that are playing in schools that see now an actual pathway into a world that maybe many, many moons ago, only a few months ago, many didn't believe it could happen. So for us as a football club, it's a great feeling. And I've already said previously, we got promoted and the first thing we looked at was how we're going to compete, how we're going to challenge. I think now it's important that we actually take stock of this achievement and we enjoy it, because as we found, this league is punishing. It's a tough league to be in, and I think we need to enjoy this period now before we start planning and moving anything forward. But yeah, we just need to enjoy it and appreciate the hard work that everyone's put in, and it's not just who's with the club now, playing wise, staff wise, volunteer wise. It's whoever's been a part of the journey for the last 27 years to get us to this point. And obviously a lot of hard work's happened in a short period of time to achieve the licence criteria. But it's not just one person. It is purely a group of people over the years that have stuck together. We've kept the values and we'll continue to do that.
Because you never gave in, did you? You know, the easy thing would have been for the club to kind of admit defeat. We've seen other clubs bigger than Yeovil, if we're honest, not apply for a top one or top two licence. I guess the question a lot of people want to know is, how have you done it? You know, how have you managed to convince the FA that Yeovil Town are going to be able to compete and be sustainable in that top tier?
I don't think it's convincing the FA. I think it's the fact that we actually do what it says on the tin. We've done that from the start. We've engaged the communities. Our attendances are one of the highest within WSL. We play at Hewish Park, which is one of the best grounds within WSL. Our structures are improving. Our facilities, our full-time staff is growing. So everything that the FA have wanted in the last 4 years from a WSL club in the previous licence criteria, we've met. We've improved. We've won Club of the Year twice. You know, you don't win Club of the Year for just a very good social media campaign. It's the work that you do outside. It's everything that you do to make yourself or make the clubs as strong as possibly as what we can. So have we done anything different than what we've usually done? No, we've actually just gone out and said, this is what we want to do. This is what we know we can achieve. And if you're happy with our plan, then we'll go out and do it. And the plan is to now go out and achieve it. And like I said, we'll take stock of that plan over the next couple of weeks, but we'll enjoy this moment. And then, you know, the hard work really, really does start. And that's from top to bottom, inside, outside, left to right, upside down, you name it. We've got to make sure that we achieve what we set out to achieve. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of eyes watching. And there's no better feeling than proving people wrong. And this is what this football club's been about for a very long time, and it'll continue to be that way, I'm sure.
I think, you know, I'm not going to ask you to comment on it, but timing-wise, this was, I think, something that people criticised in some parts, were a little bit confused by. It came very much out of the blue, didn't give teams an awful lot of time to put their plans in place. Now that you know that you're going to be continuing as a top-tier club, we've already spoke about it off record, or off the recording, sorry, that you've still got 11 games to get through this season. So you've got the 11 games this season, then you've got to be planning for this new top tier from the following season. I mean, for you as a head coach, what happens for you now in terms of trying to get the team through this season and then focusing on the new one?
I don't think I have to do anything, really, if you think about it. The players now are playing for their futures. Every single one of us are playing for our futures. I think that the decision of when it was all released was, as you said, confusing. And a lot of people criticised it, but it was very confusing. And no matter how hard we worked and how hard we tried to keep the players focused on the training pitch and into match days, you know, obviously the situation surrounds you. You know it, you feel it, you see it, you're on social media, you read it every day. So it's been an interesting time. We've learned a lot about each other and our players, and the players have learned a lot about the staff. And it's now an exciting time for these players, because now they really do have a future to play for. Whereas before, they were maybe just playing for 3 points. They're actually playing for themselves as well as the club. If they want these, and we said it to the girls last night. We said to the players last night after training, look, you're the ones with the shirts. If you want to keep those shirts, then you've got to go out and show that you deserve those shirts. And for me, as a head coach and as a manager of this football club, it's mostly a very liberating situation to find ourselves in. And hopefully we can go out and express that feeling on the football pitch in the next, you know, 10 to 11 games, including an FA Cup run as well, hopefully, with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I never like to use men's teams as an opportunity for women's teams to have a go, or for fans to bash them or anything like that. But I think from my perspective, what makes this all the more remarkable is that, you know, your team is going to be playing in the highest division of English football in the women's game. And as we record, the men's side at Yeovil are in the fourth tier. They are very, very close to the relegation zone and could potentially drop out of the league altogether come May and be a non-league side. I'm in no way looking for you to comment on that, but is this another sign of how hard you guys are working and how well you've done in terms of, as you say, engaging the community, getting those players fired up, getting promotion into the top tier initially, and then having this application accepted?
I never like to compare the two teams within the one organisation. It's not the way that myself or the gaffer Darren has ever done anything. You know, we're fully supportive of each other. And the way the men's, you know, obviously Darren and the men find themselves at the moment is, for me as a football fan for the football club, is a concern, obviously. And I know how hard they're working on the training pitch. I see it. I know them. I know how hard they're working, and it's a difficult place for the guys to find themselves in. But last night they won in the FA Cup, so then third round of the FA Cup. So there's a lot of positives that can be taken from the men's program at the present moment in time, but, you know, when we concentrate on the girls, it's a completely different program for what we see, and we punch way above our weight. Everyone knows that, and you've known me a long time. You know how driven that I am as an individual, and that the football club is. You know, you've been around us long enough to know that we're a driven club. We want to achieve what we set out to achieve, and we're realistic with our aims. And this one was a very big. Very big step, and the FA have gladly accepted the application, and we'll go out and fight every day to make sure we achieve it.
You say you're realistic with your aims. The initial aim will have been to have this application accepted. What's the next aim, Jamie?
to enjoy it. That's what I keep saying. The next 7 to 10 days is Christmas period. We've still got training up until the Christmas period. We've got a game to prepare for against Liverpool after Christmas. And what a way to start our new year and start the, you know, potentially in many people's eyes, maybe a new season against Liverpool. Liverpool are a club that I've got great affinity to. When I first took over, we played Liverpool in a pre-season friendly and we beat them 1-0 in a pre-season friendly. And that was the day I realised that I thought, you know, we've got a chance of getting out of WSL 2 here. And that was 2.5 years ago. So, you know, Liverpool was our first WSL 1 game in the spring series. Everyone understands or everyone knows about the kit situation. So it got loads of public exposure for us. And it's a great way to start 2018, and we'll start preparing. Well, not start preparing. We are preparing for the Liverpool game now. We've got fitness testing on the weekend to make sure the players are leaving for their Christmas program where we need them to be. And when they return back in after Christmas, we make sure that we prepare on the training pitch ready for the Liverpool game. And what a great occasion that can be for every single player, every single member of staff and the football club moving forward.
Oh, I think that's a perfect way to end the interview, mate. I really do congratulate you and everyone involved in the club. Incredible. You have to go out there. You have to be a part of everything. You're the head coach of the club, so you can't play down your role in what's gone on. But incredible achievement for Yeovil, as we've already said. Top-tier club at the moment, and will be a top-tier club from next season as well. Jamie, thanks for joining me, mate.
Cheers, KT. Thank you, mate.
So that was Jamie Sherwood. Big thanks to him and congratulations to all of those teams that have entered the new structure for next season. JJ, we're going to do a little bit of a roundup of what else is going on across Europe. And before we do that, I should mention that this coming weekend there are Continental Cup fixtures going on in the FAWSL. It's at the quarterfinal stage. Haven't really covered the Continental Cup this season because, to be honest with you, some of the games are so one-sided. It's kind of only at the knockout phase where it starts to get a little bit interesting. So quarterfinal ties this coming weekend will be between Everton and Reading, Chelsea and Liverpool, Arsenal and Sunderland, and Manchester City will travel to Bristol. The other kind of big talking points across Europe, Linköping have a new head coach. They will be led by Swede Marcus Wolfredsson, who has come from or was formerly of Norwegian club Mjøndalen. So don't know much about him, to be honest, JJ, but I know that Katja Krejcilund, our Damelsvensken writer from Denmark, is, I think I saw a tweet from her saying that she's pretty pleased with the appointment of Marcus Wolfredsson. So we shall have to see how he performs at Linköping. There was also some big games that took place in Europe this week. Lyon overcame PSG. Obviously, that's a big rivalry that exists in France. I watched that one. PSG gave a good account of themselves, to be fair, but it was a brilliant Ada Hegerberg header in the first half that separated the two teams, and it means that Lyon cement their place at the top of the table. Now, I want to talk to you about Wolfsburg against Bayern Munich in the Frauen-Bundesliga. Now, it was Wolfsburg that came out on top 3-1, but that was not the major talking point of the match. The major talking point, there was two of them, and it was red cards for Tessa Vuolaar and Jovana Damjanovic. Now, I'm going to let you run through this one, mate, because I've just spoken for about 2 minutes without you getting a word in. So how about you talk about those two red cards?
All right, so I guess we'll start with Tessa Vuolaar's one, where I guess it was in the lead-up to it, right? Just a bit of your rash challenge in there, takes down a player, gets a yellow card, right? Okay, so then all of a sudden, I'm watching this in front of me play out. I don't know if anything was said or if this was purely just frustration. Quite frankly, I'm shocked what she did. She spits at the referee, which, honestly, that is a no-no in any sport. Nonetheless, we're at this stage right now, and she gets a second yellow and gets sent straight off the field. And then, in the second minute of stoppage time, when albeit the match is pretty much done and dusted at this point, where it was 3-1, Wolfsburg are going to get all 3 points at home, Damjanovic all of a sudden just starts shushing the crowd. Now, speaking from the American perspective, when you see something like that, it's usually trying to, you're a road team, you're leading, and you're trying to make a statement, which is albeit rash, to be honest. But yeah, I don't exactly know what's going on here. So, Kieran, at the end of the day, this is one of those where heads were lost, the blood was boiling. These two teams are very much at the top of the Bundesliga right now, and it's, you know, kind of being these two teams going back and forth over the last couple of years. You'd have to figure at some point a true rivalry is going to start breaking out, and it just wasn't a good day for either of these teams, and especially for those two. Hopefully they learned from it, because that's all you can ever want out of a moment like this, but it is shocking.
Yeah, I think for those that haven't seen them, they are on the Women's Soccer Zone Twitter feed. We've captured some GIFs of both of them. Tessa Vollaert, just for clarification, hasn't spat on the referee. She's kind of started to walk away, turned her head in the direction of the referee and spat on the floor right in front of her. Now, it is a sign of dissent. It was the right decision to send her off, no doubt about that. Why she's done it, I've no idea. I mean, I have never spoken to Tessa Vollaert, but from what I hear, that is not in her nature at all. And her team was leading. That's where I'm really confused. Yes, she's got a yellow card for a foul that she's committed, but your team is ahead. Don't do something like that. That's just ridiculous. And the thing is that she's got the two yellows. We're going to have to keep an eye on that one, because there's obviously the potential, and it may already have been decided and I haven't seen it. That ban could be extended. You know, two yellows is usually a one-game ban. But because of the nature of the yellow card, and because of the nature of the sending off, that could be extended for all we know. But Damjanovic won. We see players sometimes shush crowds. We see them try and wind them up. She was being, well, not her individually, but the players were being booed by the Wolfsburg supporters. You're right. There is a little bit of a rivalry that is developing between Wolfsburg and Bayern. That one, I don't know. That one, I think it's take it or leave it. I can understand why the referee has given it. But at the same time, as you said, 92nd minute, Wolfsburg are on the verge of victory. I'm not sure. You might disagree with me, but I don't think that one was necessarily had to happen.
In what case? The reason that she did it, or why she got sent off?
Why she got sent off?
Yeah, I mean, look. Referees, it's a challenging job as it is. And I know a lot of people always give a lot of shtick to them, but let's be honest, it's a thankless job in any sport to be a referee or an official, because you have the duty to try and keep a match running under control to the best that you can. And I think at that moment, maybe perhaps the referee got their heads lost a little bit in that sequence. I think it's one of those things where maybe on second look, it might have not happened. And perhaps, again, you know, similar to Vollaert's, we could see the red card rescinded here for that, because, you know, there's no animosity. There's no challenge being laid on anybody. There's no intent to injure. It's just a moment of losing your head, but it's even of a harmless variety. So, yeah, we don't know. It's disappointing. Hopefully everything gets sorted out rather quickly and we kind of just move on from here, but we will have to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, two silly red cards, but big win for Wolfsburg. Early season, obviously. We've still got half the season to go, but early statement from them as we approach the Christmas period. JJ, let's have a little break, and then when we come back, we'll move over to your side of the Atlantic.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So, JJ, last week the NCAA College Cup took place, and the final was between Stanford and UCLA. It was Stanford that came out on top, I think. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, it was their second College Cup victory. And I know that you watched it. So the floor is yours, my friend. Give us some insight. The score, the game.
Yeah, I mean, hey, for the first time, I think ever, we had both teams in a final score more than two goals. You and I know how tight final matches can be. Usually they're not eye-pleasing, but I mean, this was a free-flowing match, and I've talked to coaches who have played again, or had their sides play against both teams. One coach, for those that follow me on Twitter, I broadcast the Yale women's soccer team. They went out to Stanford. They were one of many teams to lose by American football score lines. That was 7-0 on the day. I mean, they've beaten some teams down 9-8-0 on some days. But yeah, you could figure almost that these two teams, Stanford and UCLA, were going to get to the final. I mean, their lineups are world class. I mean, they're bringing full youth internationals and even at some point full senior internationals off the bench. That's how deep these two teams are. And yeah, at the end of the day, two attacking sides, Stanford, you kind of had a feeling that the way that they're going about their business were going to get the job done. Led 2-0 in the 26th minute. Big credit to UCLA. They can draw a penalty. Jesse Fleming puts one away in the 55th. And then a couple of minutes later, Delaney Sheehan levels things before Jay Boissier rockets one from somewhere out in the ozone in the 67th minute. Beats the keeper, all ends up, and Stanford go home with the title. But I think it was a fun match. It really was. It was one that I think deserved to showcase the two teams because they were the best of the two, you know, the best of all the NCAA teams this year, and they put on a good show. It's a little unfortunate. I think the you know, the attendance for the College Cup was a bit disappointing, but again, that's what happens when you have two teams from the West Coast in the final. Less than 2,000 show up, but they're trying to check, you know, use new facilities and see what works, what doesn't work. But I think all in all, good tournament, and definitely going to be seeing a lot of these players, not only in the NWSL in the next couple of years, but definitely playing on the international stage for the respective national teams.
Yeah, of course, it was Duke and South Carolina University that got to the semifinals alongside Stanford and UCLA. I guess from our side, we don't get to see a lot of college soccer. We did have access to the final, and we had reruns of the two semifinals as well, which was obviously, you know, a real bonus for us. How big is this in terms of the draft? How many of those players, I wouldn't ask you to put an exact number, but across those four teams, how many realistically do you think we could see in the NWSL next year?
Yeah, fair amount. I think, you know, off the top of my head, I looked down just at the Stanford roster in total. You know, it starts with Annie Sullivan. Obviously, this was her senior year. She's obviously been called up to the national team a fair amount. Their keeper, Allison, God, I know I'm going to get this one. Actually, no, she's a redshirt junior. Thank goodness. I'm not even going to go that way. but yeah, I mean, you know, she could be there. There's a lot of underclassmen on that team. So Stanford, it'll be in the coming years for UCLA. Similar, but I think across the board, Kieran, it's a good showcase. I know a number of the NWSL teams were in attendance and scouting that match and, you know, keeping an eye on how things going, especially in the years to come. I know for South Carolina, you had Savannah McCaskill, who was there, who's been kind of this gritty, grindy forward. She's going to make an impact in the league. It is curious. The one thing that's kind of odd, and when I hear your thoughts on this, as opposed to years past, we have not heard a lot from seniors declaring themselves eligible for the league. I wonder when the league is going to be announcing that number and that list of players who are going to go, because again, it is a showcase event. It's the first opportunity for some teams, and especially for one team, the Utah Royals, to start to add to their roster.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we know from experience, don't we? We go and cover the NWSL draft, and we'll be doing the same again in Philadelphia on the 18th of January. Names get added right up to the last minute, don't they? We get a list of those individuals that have declared themselves available for the draft, and that list can change right up to the hour before the draft actually takes place, can't it? So it'll be interesting to see when we actually get some of those names. You mentioned there Savannah McCaskill. Now, obviously, she had a really good season for South Carolina. She has been named, hasn't she, as one of the three Mack Herman Trophy finalists alongside Andy Sullivan, and I think it was Jesse Fleming who was the other one from UCLA. We saw Kadisha Buchanan win it last year. Of the three that have been made finalists, who would you go for?
I mean, it's interesting because a lot of people were thinking perhaps the freshman wonder kid of Stanford, Katarina Macario, would get it, but I think probably Sullivan, just because, I mean, it's not only the body of work that she's had over the past 4 years, but also coming back from that ACL injury that she had. I think it was the back part of last year. So the fact that she was able to fight back and still find a way to make a big impact on the Stanford team, I think she gets it. Can't forget about Fleming, of course, but a lot of her season was kind of back and forth between Canada and UCLA and McCaskill. I think while South Carolina had an unbelievable season, you know, big kudos to them down there. But I think it's probably going to be Sullivan who takes it.
Yeah, and we're expecting Sullivan to be the first pick in the draft as well, aren't we? I don't think there's any surprise that she's likely to go top of the pile. You mentioned a couple of minutes ago the Utah Royals. We should really mention them because Laura Harvey, as we know, is the new head coach. This week they announced that Liva Pudlian, another Brit coming to the NWSL, my friend, in the coaching staff. Scott Parkinson, who was the head coach of Rogers State University in Oklahoma, who I believe were a Division II college. He's going to be assisting Laura Harvey. I don't know much about him. I know we spoke off recording. You don't know much about him either. So maybe we'll try and get him on at some point. But we know about the Utah Royals. We know that they are going to be the newest franchise in the NWSL, replacing FC Kansas City. But what does it mean for the area of Salt Lake? Well, we spoke to Ashley Scobie on the last episode about what it will mean to Kansas City to lose an NWSL franchise. So I spoke to Maddie Lee, who is a soccer reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. She'll be covering the team in 2018, so I wanted to find out what it means to Salt Lake to have a new women's team and an NWSL franchise. So this was Maddie and myself having a chat about the Utah Royals. So I'm delighted to be joined by Maddie Lee, who is an MLS and now NWSL soccer writer for the Salt Lake Tribune. Maddie, thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
You are very welcome. Obviously, you're going to be new to our listeners at Women's Soccer Zone because, of course, we know that the Utah Royals are the newest member of the NWSL, a club that you will be covering in 2018. I've got to ask first off the hat, how has the reception been locally to the knowledge that women's soccer is going to be coming to Salt Lake in 2018?
It's honestly been great. Everyone I've talked to has sounded very excited. I've gotten a ton of, you know, replies on Twitter having people say that they're so excited to bring their kids to the games. And the whole city seems, at least in my circle, seems to be pretty abuzz about it.
When was it locally that you started to get a whiff that Rail Salt Lake were interested in bringing an NWSL club to the area? Because it happened so quickly. Obviously, for those that don't know, they have taken over the license of FC Kansas City. As far as we're aware from the teleconference and the news that's already out there, this was a process that happened in a matter of weeks. When was it that you started to get an inkling that this was going to be happening?
Well, the funny thing is, Deloy Hansen, the owner of Rail Salt Lake, has been talking about it in general terms for years. And it's always been like part of his plan, but really didn't become, no one thought that it was going to happen now, right? From, you know, us in the media to even, you know, general manager Craig Weibel said at the press conference, he really didn't know until 2 weeks before he gets a call from Deloy and he's like, we're bringing a team in. And he's like, all right, cool, next year. And he's like, nope, right now. So I really didn't start to hear about it until like days before they actually announced.
And in terms of how long is it that you've covered Rail Salt Lake for?
I actually came in mid-season, so I've been here 5 months.
So from what you've learned in that five-month period and that five-month stint that you've had covering the MLS club, how do you feel that this may transition into the women's team in terms of the support that they might receive, in terms of the facilities that they're going to have available to them? Give us a bit of an overview as to how this team might look when the season starts.
Yeah, well, so they just opened a big new training facility in Harriman, which is like 40 minutes outside of Salt Lake City. And so they're moving the USL team out there, essentially. So that leaves locker room, training space, all that completely open for the women's team. So they'll be playing at Rio Tinto Stadium, which is where Real Salt Lake also plays. Beautiful stadium, view of the mountains, the works. It sounds like they'll probably end up closing up some of the, the upper bowl seating. So kind of like, MLS teams will do for in football stadiums and all that, depending on how good their attendance is. But they're going to be using a lot of the same facilities, a lot of the same. They're bringing on a bunch of new people. I've heard different things from like 16 to 20. I'm not sure if they even know exactly how many people they're going to be hiring, but on the technical side and making sure that they have the training staff and the coaching staff and everything that they need. But they've really emphasized wanting to put all the facilities and all the resources on par with the MLS team.
And in terms of, for those maybe listening outside of the United States, how much competition is there for the Utah Royals in terms of media space, in terms of teams that they will be competing with to try and attract fans, to try and attract interest? I know about some of the teams on the men's side in Utah, but maybe you could give a little bit of insight into what sort of female teams there are in the area.
Right. So this is actually going to be the only first-tier professional women's team in the area. The last one that was in Utah was a WNBA team that left, I believe in the 90s. I don't have the exact dates out here, but that was the Utah Stars, who then went to San Antonio. Only top tier women's team. And then as far as men's teams, you've got two professional teams, and then college football is really who you're competing with.
So there really is space in the market for a professional women's team. The likes of Becky Sauerbrunn and Sydney LaRue, who are obviously US women's national team internationals, and some of those players that maybe have a slightly higher profile could potentially be the individuals that, whether it's male or female sports fans, could be attracted to and really get behind this team.
Right, there really is. And talking to, former professional women's soccer players and, coaches and everything, I think they seem pretty excited about that prospect, because, if you bring in an NWSL team to, say, a larger market, you're then competing with a ton of professional teams trying to carve out this space. In Salt Lake, it's I believe the smallest market in MLS, but pulls pretty well around here, and there is space for them to carve out a following.
Because it's still a relatively new franchise itself, isn't it? It's only formed in 2005, I think, Real Salt Lake. They won an MLS Cup 2009, I think it was. I mean, how ambitious is this ownership? How ambitious is that hierarchy in making the Utah Royals a real force in women's soccer?
They are setting their sights high. Talking to Deloy, he's expecting to be on par with Portland right off the bat. Sounds like he's willing to put the resources into it. They've had lots of talks with Portland. I think there is a soccer culture here that they're going to be leaning on. I'm not going to confidently say that they're going to draw 17,000, average of 17,000 right off the bat, like Portland has been doing. But there's support for college women's soccer. This past season, BYU averaged the highest attendance in the NCAA, at least among Division I schools. So they've got a chance, but they are definitely shooting for the stars, absolutely, and we'll see if that pays off.
And of course made a huge statement, didn't they, in managing to employ Laura Harvey, obviously big success at the Seattle Reign. She had been linked with the England national team job. So to be able to convince her that this was a project worth being involved in. Have you had an opportunity to meet Laura or speak to Laura yet, Maddie?
I have. I got to sit down with her while she was in town for a short period of time. She seems great. I know you've known her for longer than I have, but she's hilarious and obviously has a track record of success. It was a really great hire. And talk about really great timing, you know? A couple weeks earlier or later, they might not have been able to gain that interest from her, you know?
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. I think there were definite suitors out there, definite interest in trying to obtain Laura's services. I guess, you know, we now know that the team is set up. We've got the name, we've got the location as to where they're going to play. I know season tickets went on sale, I think it was last week or the week before. Is there any indication as to how they're going at the moment?
Last that I talked to them, it sounded like they had gotten a bunch of interest already. They sent out, before they even put out the season tickets, they had essentially like an interest page where you could write in and say that you were interested, and those people are getting priority, as well as, I believe, not entirely sure on this, I'll have to go back and check, but I believe that RSL season ticket holders also had somewhat of a priority there. But RSL, or the organization, seems pretty excited about the amount of interest that they've seen so far. Now it's early, but
absolutely, it's early, and of course we'll learn more about what that squad might look like when the draft takes place in Philadelphia in January, and I'm sure there'll be some trades. Laura Harvey is the queen of the trade, as we've seen in her time in Seattle. Matt, I'm sure it's going to be really exciting for you, a new avenue, a new venture for you. You are the person to follow in Salt Lake, so do you want to tell people how they can follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm mostly on Twitter, and that's at Maddie_M_Lee. And that's M-A-D-D-I-E, and then M as in Mary, L-E-E.
Brilliant. Well, Maddie, look, thank you for coming on. Let's get you back on at some point during the season. You can tell us how the club is going and any jokey conversations that you might have had with Laura Harvey in that time.
Wonderful. I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me.
So big thanks there to Maddie. JJ, I think we can wrap it up, mate. I think we've covered a fair amount.
Yeah, I think one thing that we forgot to note, though, this did happen a couple of days ago, that the Netherlands and their new kind of collective bargaining agreement that they reached running through the World Cup. I know, obviously, we had our Euros recap, but I think big shout to them, obviously, the Federation recognizing the work that their Lionesses put in, especially this past Euros, and they're going to get paid. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, we've seen it a few times now, haven't we? There's a nice image on Twitter of Maren Mjelde, the Norway captain, alongside the captain of the men's team, signing their contracts to, you know, to showcase the equal pay that they're going to get. There was they're both wearing T-shirts that have got equal or equality written on them. So, yeah, absolutely. The Netherlands have sorted that out very quickly, because I heard a whisper not long after the Euros that potentially could have been the latest federation and team situation that could have blown up, because the women's team weren't being compensated properly, especially after winning a major tournament as well. But you're right, really important to mention that. But we will wrap it up there, mate. Thank you so much, as always, for your time, pal.
Absolutely.
And thank you very much, listeners. As always, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for downloading this episode and having a listen. You can contact us on Twitter on @WosoZone. Email us on WosoZone@gmail.com. Of course, always go and have a look at the articles that we have on womenssoccerzone.com. You can listen to the podcast there as well. Until then, take care of yourselves, and bye-bye.